What is up, everybody? We are back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. We are presented by PPV.com. It's the usual suspects. It's Dan Cadovio. It's Chris Algieri. And we are ready to talk about a demolition job that happened in the welterweight division and some other boxing hijinks as we do every single week, twice a week. Go rate and review us. I never ask you to do that. So go rate us 5 stars. Give us a review on Apple or Spotify or however you listen to the podcast. If you're watching it, like the video. That's a big thing I heard. If you like the video, it gets into more people's feeds on YouTube, because if you want to see our faces on YouTube, whoever you digest this show, we appreciate you every single week. Right, Chris?
Yeah, you know, you got to get in that algo. That's what the kids say. You got to get in the algo, that algorithm. Which I don't know what that means. I don't know how that works.
You're not on TikTok, right?
What?
You're not on TikTok, are you?
I am not.
The TikTok algorithm can get you in a chokehold. You could be up till 4 in the morning watching videos.
That's why I avoid it. I got too many things to do to get lost in another social media platform, especially one like that.
I'll tell you this, though. I'll tell you what, our Inside Boxing Live, that's our best platform. That's our highest followers are on TikTok. Yeah. Because we put out quality content.
We live in a clip age, man. It's all about the clips. People are really into clips.
Right. We put a clip out and it upsets people in the industry, and we get to tell them, you know, listen deeper. Click on the link. Watch the whole video. Subscribe. All that good stuff.
Guys, the meat and potatoes of it is in the podcast. The clips are great. The clips are to get you to listen to the episode. Don't get mad at the clips. All you boxers.
I'm glad you brought up meat. I'm glad you brought up meat and potatoes. Your steak review has lit the internet on fire. Yeah. Black and Blue Steak it's scared people. It's got people talking. It's got our community up in arms. It's got the steak community happy, because that's a staple of the steak community. Do you have any comments? Do you have an official statement from the first ever Chris Algieri steak review live from Keene Steakhouse in Manhattan?
Well, first and foremost, there will be more. This is going to be a thing. It was a lot of fun. I eat a lot of steak. We always eat steaks when we're on the road. So it's going to be easy content to put together. There's people who liked it. There are people who hate it. There's people who think I'm a carnival. I'm a cannibal. I'm not even a carnivore. I'm an actual cannibal.
A step above carnivore.
That's a step above carnivore. But there will be many more, and you'll be seeing me. And listen, I've always eaten really, really rare steak, and people always comment on my food posts about how gross my steak is, and that's still mooing. But guess what? There's going to be more of that. So, and like you said, the steak community loves that. They love black and blue Pittsburgh style, as they call it as well. That's the chart outside the cool blue center. Best way to have steak.
I've been obviously a lot of steakhouses with you, and I've heard you say black and blue. Never thought much of it until we went through with that video. I did not know it was legitimately cold in the middle. That part blew my mind.
Yep, that's what I mean. Literally black on the outside, blackened, broiled. You know, I said the broiler was on point that day at Keene's, which it always is. But no, they nailed it, man. They did it just right.
They kicked us out of there. I mean, we went in there for lunch, and they're turning it over for the dinner crew, and they were like, "Can you guys leave?" Because we were having such a good time in there, you know, eating steaks, drinking martinis.
Can you stop producing content? Stop drinking martinis and get the hell out of here so we can make some money. Like, whoa, 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 whoa!
And then we go over across the street, and we run into Johnny Drinks from the Instagram fame. Nice guy.
Yeah, he's walking around, and he's a well dressed, good looking dude. And I'm like, I know that guy. I'm saying to Dan, I'm like, I think that's an influencer guy. I'm pretty sure I follow him. I'm like, oh yeah. And I wave him down, and he's very, very humble, very cool guy. I'm like, you're an Instagram guy. He goes, yeah, I'm Johnny Drinks. I was like, yes, I follow you. Great stuff. Really good content. Really, really nice guy. Hung out and talked to us for a while.
Yeah, Johnny Drinks. And then we ended the night raising a banner. Team Algieri, Mikey Algieri. Shout out to him. 3-time Ringmasters champion with a nice win. I'm not just saying this because you're my friend and I love your nephew, but I thought he looked the most polished out of all the fights that I watched. And did I watch a lot of fights. Your nephew was the 16th fight of the night. awesome experience. First time, I think it might have been my first time ever at a Ringmaster event.
Really?
First time in a long
time. That's your first one?
Wow. Maybe first time in a long time. I definitely went to a Golden Gloves event at some point in my life, but it's been a while since I've been to an amateur event. And man, was it refreshing to watch these kids, these men and women, get in the ring for the love of the sport, I'm sure there are politics that I don't know about, but to me, it looked like just guys and gals getting in the ring, fighting for their neighborhood, fighting for their gym, fighting for pride. None of this not political nonsense. Long story short, great job, Michael Algieri. The next in line, and you told me, Chris, that he's better than me. I'm sorry, yeah. He is. He is. Yeah.
Definitely is. And I've been saying that for a while, but I know people are starting to notice it. They'll be like, wow, he's like really good. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm telling you, he's better than I am. Definitely. And we just, never know how the pros go. Pros are really difficult. We'll figure it out. So it's really tough. It's a lot of landmines in that pro game. But I am confident that, with a little bit of guidance and all the hard work that he puts in, it's going to be a fun ride for as long as it lasts.
You're a brother, man.
I do want to talk about USA Boxing a little bit, though, because I have zero amateur fights. I know people probably know that about me. I went right to the pros from kickboxing. I didn't get a chance to fight in the amateurs. I didn't get a chance to box in the amateurs at all. I'm not in that fraternity. I've never been in that fraternity. Most of the champions that you see, they all know each other for decades. Like, mm-hmm. I remember, when I was close with Danny Jacobs in camps, and we were talking about, like, him and Sean Porter fought a couple times, like, all these Danny Garcia, all these guys, Terrence Crawford, Saddam Ali fought Terrence Crawford. Like, all these guys all knew each other from when they were kids. So when you see world champions, I would say 90% of them, if not more, have very extensive amateur backgrounds and all actually know each other and came up in the ranks, because in the U.S., our amateur system is fantastic. So all these guys really came up through the ranks together. And for me now to experience it through my nephew, it's such a great program for these.
It really guys. Is.
It's incredible. I remember going to Michael's first fights, and like, I think it was his first or second fight. He's online in the bathroom, and he had Algieri on his back. His opponent was online behind him, and he goes, "Hey, I think I'm fighting you." And he's like, "Oh, all right." And they kind of chatted a little bit. I'm like, "All right, I'll see you in there." And then afterwards, they exchange numbers after the fight. They spar each other when they're in Miami. Like, it's just like, it's such a different experience and such an awesome thing that these young people are able to do. And the organizers do such a great job. Shout out to Sonia Lamanakis. She handles all the stuff in New York. She's phenomenal the way that she puts these events together. But dude, we should go every year. I think we should go to
down.
The finals.
Yeah, I'm in.
Every year, even if Michael's not in them.
I thought it was so cool. I like the spirit. That's what it is. The spirit of it. Like your nephew, they were hugging after the fight between him and his opponent. I know they fought like 4 or 5 times. There was no real animosity between the fighters. I mean, there was no real animosity in the crowd. Mm-hmm. It's all different gyms. It's all different neighborhoods. It's just a cool vibe. And you're right. The spirit of it is let's get better. Let's figure out a way that we can all get to the pros. And then maybe when you get to the pros, like we've seen this at the highest level, like Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, they fought six times. And like, they knew that they were going to see each other again. Like, I'm sure your nephew knows that he's going to see some of these kids again in the future. And I'm sure a lot of these other fighters that were there on Thursday night thought the same thing. So shout out to USA Boxing. That was a really cool experience. I'm sure Boots Ennis went through the USA Boxing program, and now he is at the top of the game, and that's where we will start this episode. Jerron Ennis destroys Amanis Stanionis in 6 rounds, not 7. My bet did not hit, but whatever. I can't believe that, by the way. That was nuts. They stopped it in the 6th round. If it went, the bell rung, I win the bet, but it's not about me, Dan. It's about boxing. It's about Boots. Man, from the opening bell, Chris, he was on his ass. Boots, zero waiting out process, running numbers right away. Just a virtuoso performance from Jerron Ennis.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I expected a good fight because I actually rate Stanionis very high. I think he's a really good welterweight. I think he's got good momentum. He's been in with some tough guys, really good performances, and just stylistically, I thought that he matched up in a way that he'd be able to push a stylist like Jerron. But listen, Jerron at his best, and I said this on one of the shows on Pro Box last week, I'm like, both these guys at their best, Jerron wins. And he probably does it pretty easily. But are we going to see him at his best? Because lately we haven't. In the Karen Chukadzian fights, that's a lot to be desired. His struggles with weight made a lot of question marks regarding where Boots was going to be. So, but I think he showed up at his very best that night, and he put on a ridiculously awesome performance. He's my favorite style in boxing. That style that he employs, which is like a combination of East Coast Philly style, good boxing IQ, but he's aggressive. He's an aggressive counter puncher. He likes to lead and to counter. He's a fantastic body puncher. Does it from the southpaw position too. He switches sides. He's very fluid. And for me, watching wise, the most enjoyable aesthetic style I see that today is Boots Ennis.
I agree. And we got away from that for a little bit because, I mean, those 22 to 24 rounds with Karen were, mm-hmm. were not great for Boots. But before that, we were seeing that style from Boots. We were seeing the second coming of a Terrence Crawford, maybe even more fluid in there, maybe even like a little Roy Jones-esque. Like these were the conversations we were having in like 2021, 2022, when Boots was just burst onto the scene and he was blowing these fighters out and he was doing it with this really fan-friendly style. He'll stand in the pocket. He will get hit. And like, you know, Stanionis didn't have many moments in this fight, but he did have a few. And
he
if there is one
shots.
He did land some hard shots out of that high guard, just not enough because Boots just overwhelmed him. The first thing I noticed from Boots is we talked about a little bit about how it takes him a little bit to warm up, get that engine going, and then once it gets going, he's rifling off 60, 70 punches. Man, he was right in that from the opening bell, which leads me to believe that the weight cut was not an issue this time around. We saw the photos last week. He did not look good in those photos. We saw the weigh-in. I tweeted out that Stanionis is the smaller guy, and I could not believe the amount of comments that I got. Like, Stanionis is not smaller. Stanionis is bigger. Stanionis looked dwarfed inside of that ring because Ennis is that big, and he rehydrated well. He just his movement in there. Like he was not a stationary target for Stanionis. Stanionis is a stationary target. He's very flat footed. He was just bum rushed from the start, and it erased all doubt. And it set us up for some really good conversations about Boots. Like, boxing needs this because, you know, Hearn in the ring, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but Hearn in the ring is like, he was talking 147, 154, 160 for this guy. He wants him to go undisputed in all those weight classes. He's only 27 years old. Forget about that. We kind of aged him a little bit because his career kept stalling out. Mm-hmm. And we're like, man, he's 30, 31. He's not. He's 27. He's the same age as Teofimo, Haney, Shakur. Like, this dude is put him in that regard. But I thought the weight cut was good. I want to get your thoughts on that because that's a big question. Will he stay at 147? Will he go to 154? Can he comfortably make 147 for at least two fights if he wants to become undisputed? But from the naked eye, from what I saw, like I saw someone in there who was not sluggish.
Yeah, last week I little inside track. This is Inside Boxing Live. That's why you guys tune in. I hit up our boy Kevin Rooney, and I was like, "How's that weight cut going?" And he goes, "He looks good. He doesn't look. He said he doesn't seem talking about Boots. He doesn't seem too worried about it, too concerned about the weight cut." And I was like, "Okay, that's a good thing." And then that's when I got the nugget of information that there was no IBF second day weigh-in because it was a unification fight. So because there's two titles on the line, the rule that the IBF has where it's a plus 10 pounds weigh-in the next morning or the morning of the fight was taken away because there was two belts on the line. And they're the only one that has that rule. So the IBF has
I'm glad
we
put that disclaimer in. Shout out to our listeners. I knew we were going to get like we were going on that. That was on me. I should have picked up on that right away to know that wasn't a thing because we went on a little bit with it and we put the disclaimer in. But shout out to our community and our listeners and our commenters that were right on it. Hey guys, it's not part of this fight. It's not part of this fight. So we get that, and that was a huge reason. I mean,
I think so. They really need to rethink that. I have been screaming about that from the Raptors for a very long time. I remember the New York State Athletic Commission. They actually reached out to me. This was probably about 10 years ago. And they brought up the idea. What do you think about doing same day weigh-ins again in New York? And I was like, no, it's not a good idea. Guys cannot rehydrate. It's way too dangerous. Because they were thinking that, oh, these guys are gaining so much weight. It's really dangerous for their opponent. That's rarely the case. And especially at the higher levels, you don't see guys coming in that are so much bigger. And then it makes a difference. Like I always think I'm like, okay, Canelo Alvarez, when he fought Terrence Crawford, when he fought Floyd Mayweather, excuse me, he came in. He was way heavier than Floyd. It didn't help. He lost every round. You know, it doesn't make a difference at the highest level. But guys' ability to rehydrate and hydrate their brain, especially, that matters. And not having enough time to be able to do that, I think, is really hurtful and harmful to these guys, not only in terms of their health, but also their performance. We got to see Boots at his best. And you brought up Eddie Hearn in his speech afterwards. And I think Eddie said something really poignant. And it was like, he said, we needed a performance from Jaron to show everyone that we have a pound-for-pound great. And we got it. And we got an event against his best opponent. So it was really perfect timing. It was like everything coming together at the right time, the right situation, the right platform, you know, main event, Atlantic City. Boots Ennis fighting for a unification against the number two in the division behind Boots. It was legit 1-2. We've been saying that the whole time. And he goes out there and absolutely dominates and smashes the man. Really, really cool stuff. My next ask, I want Boots in Brooklyn. Can we do Boots in Brooklyn? He's a Philly fighter.
Why Brooklyn?
Because it's Philly, so close. Yeah. So Danny Garcia made Brooklyn the Barclays Center his home. Philly fighter, and he brought the fans. You know, I love AC. AC's great. It's hard to get to. Brooklyn Barclays is way easier to get to, and I think it's a massive arena. I think that you'll get a lot of fans, and I'm sensing. Obviously, we weren't there that night, but I'm sensing that Boots is becoming a ticket seller. I have a feeling that he is going to be one of these guys because boxing needs that. We need guys who put butts in seats. Mm-hmm. I think Boots is that next guy.
He is. He's not Tank, but he's like a mini Tank in terms of he's now becoming an attraction. He's becoming a night out for folks. He's becoming, he's saying the right thing. He's very authentic. He's not like too much in your face. He doesn't put on an act. He just is what he is. He's not the best doing media. And, Tank has shown that too. Like when Tank was coming up, wasn't the best at media, which is knocking dudes out. And if Boots can get back to knocking guys out like we saw it and just running through, that does factor into selling tickets. But there's a lot of things. And I think that Eddie Hearn afterwards was very bullish on him for those reasons. I heard that this was the last fight of his 3-fight deal. I'm not too privy to that, but I'm sure that Eddie's going to want him back in the fold. But before we get to all that, I want to go just look at the numbers here. Ennis threw 80 punches in the first round, threw 81 in the second round, 67, 60, 68, 70. So he just never gave Stanionis a chance to breathe. Stanionis was in the 20s, in the 30s, with that high guard, just bloodied by the second round. Did land some counter shots, and that's the one weakness or the one fault is Boots is going to get hit in fights, but he's standing in range, and he does sometimes get a little lazy when he's coming out of an exchange, and he does. That's when he's has been getting tagged in recent fights. So I'm not going to act like he's flawless in there, but come on, the pros outweigh the cons, and his strengths are so far and away above his weaknesses. But he could make for some exciting fights when he's in there with a puncher. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see some guys get hit. I want to see how they react. I want to see him go for knockouts too. Like we talk about this all the time on the show. If you're an offensive fighter, if you're going to throw 79, 80 punches around, like, you're going to leave yourself open. You're going to leave yourself open for some counters and some shots. You know, we're seeing it from Abdullah Mason now. Everyone's criticizing him, but he's going for knockouts. Ennis goes for the kill shot, and that's something that that should be, like, applauded, I feel like.
Did you notice that draw in this fight? When he did get hit, he came back immediately, almost every time, and landed the bigger, better shot. So, like, I'm trying to remember what the actual combination was. I just rewatched the fight again this morning. So Stanionis landed one of his best shots of the night, and Boots just came right back over with a hook, and it rocked Stanionis back immediately. So that's to your point, Dan. Like, guys, if you're going for it, you're going to get touched. And, you know, I saw it in my own career. Like, when I fought Tommy Coyle, I said, because he goaded me before the fight. He called it the war in the garden. He said, we're going to, he's like, he basically was like, don't box me. He's like, let's fight, kind of thing. And I was like, all right, we all know I can outbox you, but
it actually worked.
But people were like, oh, can he outfight him? And it did work. It goaded me into a fight. And I was like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to stop you. I told everybody. My brother made a bunch of money because he was telling it. People asked me, oh, is Chris going to win by decision? He's like, nah, Chris going to stop him. Because I knew I was going for it. But I got hit in that fight. You know, I busted my nose in the second round. And listen, you go for it. You put your nose on the line, you're going to get touched. Understanding that, you know, you can be in the fray. I think Boots understands that better than anybody. He's got that Philly style. Those guys, they're counterpunchers, but they walk you down. They're right in front of you. He's catching and shooting, and you know, like, yeah, you hit me, boom, I'm coming right back. And that's another point that makes him so exciting. He goes for the knockout. He's going to get hit, but he's going to make you pay for every piece of leather you put on him. And yeah. Stanionis paid big time.
Man, he ran through him like a hot knife through butter, and he was number two in the division. I understand he's coming off of a long layoff. Understand he hadn't fought anyone of note in the division, but I don't want to hear from the Monday morning quarterbacks, you know, people trying to discredit Boots. Yeah, but Stanionis was nothing in there. I wasn't, blah, blah. I didn't hear much of that before the fight. Before the fight, I was hearing one versus two. I was hearing Boots isn't that guy. I was hearing a lot of that. You know, I had those questions too.
Let me ask you about the stoppage, though. How'd you feel about where it came? Because it did seem, I mean, it wasn't abrupt. It wasn't like out of nowhere, but, you know, he stays in the corner. Did you think it was that bad at that point? Did you?
I didn't. You know, listen, I was shocked. No, I didn't either. I was shocked.
It was my guy, Marvin Simodio. He was the trainer. It seemed like it was more his decision, and he brought it up to Stanley.
He almost talked him into it.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, you know, you saw him. He was hugging him. He's talking in his ear. You know, Marvin cares about his guys tremendously. I know he cares a lot about Stanionis. A little premature. I mean, I thought so.
I was shocked. I'm not just saying this because I had 7 through 12 for the stoppage, and my bet blew up, and a lot of people's bet blew up. That was a surefire going to be stopped, and we were going to cash in. Yeah, I was a little shocked. I am always more like along the lines of better safe than sorry. Live to fight another day. Your trainer knows you, your fighter better than anyone else in there. It was going to get bad for Stanionis, but I felt like it was just starting to get bad. It wasn't like, oh my God, that sixth round was so brutal. And the doctor needs to go over. Doctor didn't come, from what I saw, the doctor didn't go over, but, you know, his nose could have been broken for all we know. There's a lot of blood coming from it. Yeah, I was shocked, to be honest. I thought maybe one more round, two more rounds to go out. But, you know, listen, they know their fighters. Your trainers know you guys better than we do. But to be honest, I was a little like, wow, that was abrupt. But Stanionis didn't complain. Stanionis ultimately said, yeah. I mean, it wasn't like he was fighting off Marvin. And like, no, how can you do that? No, jumping up and down. I think he was just getting just steamrolled. And it was just an onslaught.
On top of being steamrolled, he was just getting outclassed. It's one thing to get, you know, you're getting hurt and you're getting beat up and you're getting dominated, but it's another thing where it's like you can't get any momentum. Stanionis could, like, he landed, like we said, he landed shots, but they were single shots. There was zero follow up. He was just getting, outclassed, outworked, and beat up on top of it. And that last round, obviously the nose was bleeding, probably broken from those nasty uppercuts that Boots was landing. But the body shots were so sneaky. They were just taking the life out of Stanionis, and that's why we didn't see that normal gas tank and engine that he normally presents. Those body shots were wicked, and he put him down, which was essentially a body shot. I know there was like five uppercuts before Stanionis went down, but it was really, he got hit with a really bad liver shot prior to that and was kind of backing up, and then got caught and went down. But also, you know, to your point, Dan, the trainers always know their guys, but there's always conversations that we don't catch on camera. You know, what was Stanionis telling Marvin in that corner? What responses was Stanionis giving to the questions that Marvin was giving that he didn't like? So, you know, we're talking about it being premature, but we don't know what those conversations were like.
Yeah, and they don't show them anymore. It's my biggest beef with boxing telecasts these days, is that it's very rare that they show the corners. HBO used to show them in between every round. I think now they only show it when it's like a sponsored element involved, like some sponsored trainer corner stuff.
Pro Box TV, Pro Box TV, we show it every round.
Thank you.
We show the corner. We show Pro the corners Box every TV. Round, and we can normally hear them. And
that's where the best dramas come from. I mean, come Absolutely. On. Let me pour some water on your balls. That was the best moment in the history of corners.
And I'm blessed to have to work with Paulie Malignaggi because he's bilingual. So when there's Spanish in the corners, so he's there to translate and tell us what's going on. So we do get that a lot on Pro Box.
Yeah. Nice. So that was what happened in the ring, and then we move on to all the other stuff too. And there's a lot of other stuff with Boots because, you know, I was talking about in the last show, like what does this mean for boxing? I wanted Boots to win. I don't want the best man to win, but I said if Boots wins and it's emphatic, we're going to be excited. Boxing is going to be re-energized. Hearn was foaming at the mouth with excitement of the thoughts, the fights that he could make and doing his job. I know he was doing his job. I thought Eddie was great after the fight. I thought he was putting pressure on Norman, just doing what, if I was a fighter like Boots who doesn't really talk a lot, this is my mouthpiece. This is why I hired this guy. And this is what Eddie is good at. But immediately they go into a pound for pound discussion. Almost like immediately, like when Stanionis is, the fight's waved off and the towels being thrown in there, they're talking about pound for pound, which I thought was a little premature. I thought it wasn't, really wasn't the discussion, but I understand, like, Sergio's excited in that moment. And he said, this is a pound for pound fighter. And then they threw some shade at Tank, which was just like weird, but whatever.
Unnecessary, but yeah.
Right. It was like, I got him above, because I think someone asked them, where do you put him? And they were like, you know, bottom, you know, 9 or 10. Let's get Tank out of there. Nakatani the Japanese guy, I forgot his name, Kenshiro. Get him out of there. Yeah, you're out. Booch is in. I understand the excitement. We call fights when you're there and the crowd is going crazy and you see something as extraordinary as you saw with that Booch performance, you get excited. But I've never been one for pound lists because I feel like, you know, we've gotten away from what the actual criteria is. But he's now in that discussion, Boots, and he's a pound for pound talent, and you can't deny that. But so much more goes into it, and then we're talking about his age, right? And we're saying, I'm like, damn, how old is this guy? I'm terrible with ages. He's 27, and I put together a list: the top seven, 27 and under, in boxing right now, because we want to highlight some of the young talent. I want to see if you agree with this list, Chris. It was kind of hard towards the back end. My top four, I feel comfortable and confident with. Coming in at number seven, Devin Haney, two-division world champion, undisputed 135, beat some big names at 140. Now he's going up to 147, 27 years of age. Number six, I have Boots in there because of his talent, and now he's a unified champion. He has the accomplishments. He has the skill set. Number five, Teofimo Lopez. Arguably undisputed with an asterisk at 135, unified champion at 140, or is he unified? I believe he is unified at 140. Champion at 140, two-division world champion, Teofimo. Number four, I have Daniel Dubois. When you're 27 years old and you have Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker and Zhang on your resume, that is insane. He could be even higher on this list. Number three, I have Junto Nakatani, has some unbelievable wins at those lower weight classes. But a lot of fight fans either don't pay attention or they don't give this guy the credit that he deserves, but he belongs on this list. He's 27 years old as well. Number two, which could cause some controversy, Shakur Stevenson. He's got the skills. He has the accolades. We're talking about a guy that has won in multiple weight classes, and now he's at 135. Could arguably beat anyone with that style, and we'll find out soon enough. And number one, Bam Rodriguez. He is 25 years old, younger than all these others. Accomplishments, scalps that he has gotten, some of these big names. So there's my list. I had to leave Ryan Garcia off the list. I was thinking about putting him seven over Haney, but I thought about what Haney has done before the Ryan fight, and I went with resume. And I went with resume for Haney and accomplishments over Ryan Garcia, who I believe has a lot of skills, and we saw what happened that night. But that's my list. Top seven under 27.
Yeah, I'm gonna give some pushback.
Go ahead.
Because, you know, the criteria is accomplishments or is the criteria who?
Here's the thing,
ass?
Bro.
This is always the thing.
I'm doing exactly what I hate. Exactly what I hate. Because what the heck is it like? What have you done for me lately? There's a little bit of a criteria here. It's got to be under 27 or right. under.
That's pretty much the only criteria that's set, because it seems like you're doing both. It seems like you're doing, this guy's like unbeatable. Number one and number two, I don't think I can't argue that. I think number one, Bam Rodriguez, because he has both. He has the accomplishments of what he's done so far in his very young age, but also he'll whoop your ass. And if you go hypothetical thought experiment, if we're in the ring and, you know, and weight isn't an issue and we're both somehow magically the same size, who wins? It's Bam. Bam is a beast. He's an absolute beast because he can box and he can punch, and he's got a tank and he's all of it. You know, but also he's also done everything he's needed to do to this point in terms of who he's beaten, how he's beaten them, the titles that he's picked up, accomplishments are there. Shakur, I always look at Shakur like, okay, you can't beat him. I don't care what you say about him. You can't beat the guy. His style, maybe the fans don't love his style, but guess what? Your favorite fighter can't beat him.
That's
so
what I mean.
He gets up there. Yeah, I just you can't touch the guy. So what are you going to do? Dubois.
Right, don't throw shade on Dubois. Come on.
No, I love Dubois. Don't get me wrong. I like Dubois, especially.
Four too low or
his
high?
Story, I don't know how these lists go. His story, the fact that he's, you know, overcome, you know, getting bullied technically by these guys, but he's quit a couple times. And that it's hard to forget, even though he's had such a good run lately. And if we're just talking about who whoops whose ass in a hypothetical question, I got to get Boots higher. Because I think Boots whips a lot of ass.
Boots six.
Boots, I know. That was tough for me to swallow.
Well, I leaned heavy
on...
The
only thing knocking him is his accomplishments.
Yeah, that's what my tiebreaker was accomplishments. My tiebreaker was...
It's not really his fault, though.
Well, he is unified. That's not nothing. That's a big thing.
He should have been world champion way before he was. He should have been you know, these opportunities. He was left on the outside.
I liked what he said after the fight. Did you catch this? Remember when they IBF stripped Crawford, and they gave the championship to Boots.
About. I love it. Yep.
Yeah, and he was like,
one day and I was champ.
He didn't like that. It was a sour taste in his mouth, and he said, "I'm really excited to win the ring belt." I'm really excited to win, technically he didn't win the IBF belt, but like he looked at this as like, all right, this is a chance for me to do it inside of the ring, which I love to hear from him. That was awesome. But yeah, with this list, it's going to be dissected. I will post it. I will get ripped. I'm sure Ryan Garcia will get upset about it and say I'm on the goofy train again. I went with accomplishments. I went with accomplishments. Nakatani at 3. I'm sure it's going to draw some ire because there's a lot of people out there that just don't watch him. I will say the Inoue.
He's so good.
But the Inoue rub, like Inoue shaking his hand and then him being in the discussions with Inoue have raised his profile. But it really, you know, Ryan is the only one I had to leave off. I had to get Boots in there because that's the whole point of this list, inspired from Boots being 27. But man, there's some good talent. And I also was like, damn, like Teofimo's getting, these guys are getting up there. Like 27 is still young, but it's like Tio's 27, Haney's 27, Shakur's 27. And Ryan Garcia is 26, going on 27. And like, I guess they're just now starting to realize, or their boxing has somehow figured out a way to try to get these guys to all fight each other. That's why I have Haney on this list, because he's already fought Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia. Haney?
Yeah, he's so accomplished. He's a 2-division world champion. He was undisputed at 135, and he beat
Momachenko. Yeah, so I got him on the list.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that. I know.
Maybe Nakatani could be further back.
I think
three is high.
Three is high, and that's what I mean, because there are guys like Boots that are like, you look at him and you're like, he'll fuck you up, but he hasn't had that many accomplishments yet. Neither is Nakatani. Nakatani hasn't had that many accomplishments, but he'll fuck you up. So you got him high, you know. So the criteria is a little. It's not across the board even. So that was my biggest knock, was probably those two. The fact that they're so far apart based on, you know, whatever criteria it is that we're using.
Embrace debate. Drive debate. Drive engagement.
I mean, it's funny. Like I'll post it later. You said last week when someone was like, yo, you shouldn't even have a boxing show. I was like, come on, dude. Like, this is what we this
respectfully.
Is what we're doing. This is the
respectfully though.
I don't like you. Respectfully, I don't respect your opinions.
Quit your job respectfully. Go get some other job, Dan. I'm sure I'll hear from that guy once again. He's by waiting in the wings from the next list that I put out. But yeah, like the discussion about Boots, I love these discussions. I love, like, this is great to have Boots entered into this because he's so important. East Coast fighter, Philly fighter. I mean, very marketable. His style is really good. And the biggest thing, Chris, is that he has some dance partners. He has guys at 147 that he can jump in the ring with. He has names. Like we just mentioned, some of these guys that are at 135 or 140. Haney is now moving up to 147. His next fight is at 144. He has eyes set on 147. Ryan Garcia is a big guy, but you know, 147 might be the weight that he settles in for the next year or two before he moves up to bigger weights. Boots is not going to stop at 154. He's going to go even higher. But what's next for Boots Ennis? And we'll start with the weight class that he's currently in, and we'll start with what I think is the best option for him, and that's a unification with Brian Norman. He is the WBO champion. He's 25 years old. He's the youngest male belt holder in boxing. He's got heavy hands. He famously turned down the fight in late 2024, but we knocked him. We criticized Norman for doing that move, but in hindsight, it was a risky move for Team Norman to turn down that fight. He was gambling on a lot of things. He was gambling on him winning his next fight. He was gambling on Boots staying at 147. He was gambling on himself, and he'll probably earn even more money the next time around. He can ask for even more, especially if Boots is dead set on becoming undisputed. He did not tip his hand in the ring. Maybe that was a negotiation ploy. If he said, I want to be undisputed, then that's the only thing I want. Boots said that in the ring. Then Norman's like, oh, price just went up, buddy, because I got this belt. It's currency. But number one fight I want to see next for Boots is the Brian Norman unification at 147.
Yeah, no, listen, I've been saying this since even before this fight, you know, when there was discussion of him moving up to 54, I was like, nah, I want to see him unify 47. Welterweight is historically an iconic weight class. And, you know, the preceding champion was Terrence Crawford. And now we got Boots coming into his own now. So why not get the unification? If he can make the weight, which it seems like he can, and he can do it healthfully, he's got two of the belts. There's still two more out there. There's Mario Barrios, there's Brian Norman. I don't think either one of them can hold a candle to Boots when he's at his best. So the guy who deserves to be number one, the guy who deserves to be undisputed is Boots Ennis. So let's go collect those belts and let's get paid along the way. Everybody's going to get paid. Everybody's going to make money. It's a money-making division. But that's up to him and his team, depending on what they want to do. But I think legacy-wise, him unifying 147 behind on the tail of Terrence Crawford, I think is a major, major feather in the cap.
Yeah, and Norman now is the newest one versus two. With Stanione is now out, I think Norman moves up. He's now one versus two, so it's got that going for it. It's a lot of money. You brought up money, and Eddie Hearn is going to have to go into that checkbook. He's have to go into that war chest and overpay for Brian Norman if that's the case. Another small little wrinkle here, and I'm not 100% sure if WBO still has this clause, but it was the reason why Usyk was able to contend for a heavyweight title shot right away is because he won. He was the super champion of the WBO at cruiserweight. So if Boots beats Brian Norman and gets the WBO belt and that clause is still intact, he can become the mandatory at 154 right away. And that's a belt being held right now by Sebastian Fundora. For the time being, 154, as you know, is a revolving door of champions. So if Boots does want to move up, that's a small wrinkle. I'm pretty sure that the clause is still around.
It may or may not matter. That clause was around when I was fighting. That's why I was able to go directly from 140-pound world champion to a title fight with Manny Pacquiao at 147. That's the same. I think people forget that I actually moved up to fight Manny. I won my title at 140 and then immediately jumped up to fight for the WBC championship at 147. So that rule was around and helped me out. It could potentially be something here, but it might not, because there's a lot of moving parts for Boots and what's coming up next.
Here's what I want to think. If you're Team Norman now, and they have shown that they could be very stubborn at the negotiating table, does Brian Norman look to Barrios, who's the other champion? Does this top rank PBC union that has been discussed in recent weeks help make that fight easier? Does Brian Norman say, you know what, I'm not going to fight Boots next? Because there was a some logic out there that Norman didn't think he could beat him. He didn't come out and say that, but he's like, am I just going to like blow, you know, this opportunity and fight for what I think is short money to a guy that is better than me deep down inside? Or am I going to just draw this out a little bit and make it even more lucrative for me? If he's from that latter thought process.
Or does he just need more experience? Because maybe he doesn't think he's better than him, but maybe he thinks like the scales are tipped a little bit because he's further along in his pro career right now.
Well, he's only fought once since then. I think that was kind of dumb. But
and he's also really young. He's really, what is he, 20?
Very young. 20. He's the youngest title holder in boxing. So I'm curious to see if does Norman go to fight Barrios. Barrios has the other belt. I would say Barrios is, you know, no offense to him, weakest champion right now at 147.
Low hanging.
And they do that in like November to December. It's on a PBC pay-per-view and you know, Amazon Prime, maybe a Tank, maybe a Benavidez undercard. And now Norman should win that, or Barrios wins it, and then it's two belts apiece. Then they go back to Boots, and it's an even bigger offer because Norman, this is an undisputed fight. If Norman wins, we're looking at two undefeated Americans. Norman's profile is raised. Boots has a voluntary defense in the meantime, or even just sits out until December. I mean, this is wishful thinking, but I'm just curious what Norman does now, because he has shown, like, you know, he has a business side, as he should. I'm curious if Norman's going to go right into the Boots fight, if Boots' team is going to just blow them away with an offer, or Norman says, you know, we went this far with not fighting Boots. Let's go a little bit further and collect another belt and then really get paid.
Well, Dan, that's an all-in bet. I know you're Danny Gambles over there, so that's an all-in bet. You're either going for the gusto, you're all in. I'm taking this chance, and I'm gonna fight Barrios. And if I win, now I got two negotiating chips. I got two belts, and the money's gonna go away. But if you lose, you're really out of the running. You lost your belt. Now there's no reason for Boots to try and fight you. You lost out on a lot of money. You'll make good money on the Barrios fight because it's unification, but it's nowhere near what Boots' money would be like. So yeah, it's an all-in bet. Like, are they going to go all in and be like, listen, I can beat Mario Barrios? Because it's not guaranteed. Mario Barrios has a ton of experience. He's tall. He's strong. You know, he looked very beatable in his last fight, but he's looked like a badass in other fights. When he fought Ugas, he looked tremendous.
Yeah, he looked like a really good in that fight.
Really badass guy, and you know, Ugas is a tough fighter. So, you know, you're betting on yourself that you're going to be able to beat Mario Barrios if you can even get the fight. But I'm with you on that. I'm like, let's make that fight. Let's make. Now we got two champions who have two belts. Now we are forcing the unification. There's no reason not to. And so, I would think that Barrios and Norman, as you know, as fighters who believe in their ability and as betting men to make more money, listen, fighters want to make the most amount of money possible. Fight each other.
Yeah, so don't want to see Boots go one by one. He might not have the option to do that if Norman and Barrios agree to fight next. It's all going to come down to Matchroom or whoever Boots' promoter is moving forward. I think Norman will look at the offer. He'll hear that initial offer, and he'll either deem it too low, just good enough, or ask for more, or dangle, oh, I have a deal with Barrios, so we have framework of a deal. Pay us more. And I think they're in a good spot. I think, you know, Norman, I'll apologize. The last time when he turned down the fight, I'll apologize with an asterisk because I thought it was a silly move, but also, like, I thought it was risky. Like, we did mention that it was a risk not to fight Boots right away because Boots had that Virgil Ortiz fight kind of lined up, even though they put in that stipulation in the contract to have it at 147, which I thought was kind of a slimy, greasy move there from Team Boots at the last second. We knew that Virgil wasn't fighting at 147 anymore. So we'll see. The Barrios fight, I think, you know, no disrespect to Barrios. I feel like we are, you know, he is the veteran of this division, and he offers a lot of difficult. He's tall and rangy, like you said. Like, he's not some walkover. Yeah, I can't get that out of my mind of Abel Ramos
he's
dropping him.
He's only 29, too, by the way.
I feel like he's like 36.
Now. I know. He's been around forever. He's only 29.
Right, and you think, you know.
He's been some really tough fights, too, though.
You saw what Gervonta did to him. Yeah, his face blew up and then that cut. I remember, what fight was it when his face was just destroyed? The draw with
He had the Thurman fight where he got beat up. He had the Ramos fight where he really, really was in trouble.
He got knocked down by Ramos, who was not the favorite. That was on the Tyson card. I do think he's beatable, obviously. I think Norman can beat him. I think Boots can beat him, but he does present some challenges. He's a wily vet, got big fight experience, tall, rangy. Still a fun fight. Like, Norman versus Barrios would be fun with Boots waiting. Biggest thing here, Chris, is like, this division has sucked for 3-4 years, or since 2023, when Spence and Crawford got in there. But it kind of sucked even before that, because Spence and Crawford took forever to be made. And in that time where it took forever to be made, a lot of the welterweights were aging out, and they were just not either had fought each other already, or were waiting on Spence and Crawford to get in there. But at least we're seeing some movement at 147. But those are that's the champion movement. One thing you cannot rule out here is if Conor Benn beats Chris Eubank, Eddie Hearn will try to make Conor Benn versus Boots at 147.
Yeah, that's definitely very possible, but that's probably not going to happen next. The Boots is going to be back before, because, you know, that fight's in 2 weeks. Boots just fought. He had a pretty easy night. I wouldn't be surprised if...
You're telling me their schedules are lining up perfectly.
Not necessarily, because it depends on, I mean, well, it really depends. If Ben goes out there and blows Eubank out and stops him early, then yeah, they'll make that fight right away. But if he has a tough fight, which is very possible, then he's probably not going to come right back. But you know who I think that Eddie's going to slide in? Shakhram Giasov.
Who the? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've heard his name a lot. Yeah.
He's undefeated. He's 31 years old. He's 17-0 with 10 knockouts. He's an Uzbek. You know, he's chomping at the bit to get a title shot. So yeah, I think he fought on the same card. Yeah, he fought on the undercard. So he's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if Eddie sneaks him in, you know, because who knows what kind of deal they have on the side where, oh, I got to get him a title shot.
One more fight, you know. Fight.
Yeah, it's one more fight. It's just one more fight. And he's got a good Sterling record. And I don't think he offers really anything for Boots. So it's
all I'm saying, bro, is the Monday after Ben Eubanks, yes, and Ben wins, you're going to see a shit ton of interviews with Eddie, with all these, you know, yep, UK YouTube guys, and Conor Ben's name will be floated for, yep, Boots at 147. It was floated before this. It was floated.
You can bet money on that one.
Yes,
you can bet money on that.
His name was floated when Boots signed with Matchroom. It was right. One of the names that Eddie was saying. Like, this is what Ben is. Like, he's just a big name, like, name at this point. And if he beats Eubank, he's going to have some credibility to his name. I do favor Ben to win that fight. That's the next big one, April 26th, over in the UK. I will be watching. I think we'll all be excited for that. But that's one you can't rule out. Then there's the wild card of this division, and what might make Boots want to stick around and keep his nutritionist and all that is the fact that Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, and Teofimo Lopez are looming for, yep, this division. Devin Haney's next fight is at 144. He's talked about wanting to fight at 147. That's his next division. Ryan Garcia, big guy, could fight at probably 160, 168 with his frame and how he blows up. But if he decides, I want to settle in at 147, my head is on straight now. That's a fight. Boots versus Ryan Garcia would be a slobber knocker. And then Teofimo has, remember, this was the plan. Turkey illustrated. I want Boots to fight whoever. I want Teofimo to fight Barboza. And I want Boots to fight Teofimo. And the winners will fight the Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney winner. That was once Turkey's plan, or flavor of the week, a few weeks back. That's what we were talking about. But I feel like those three guys, those names, I'm not going to call them the kings anymore, but Boots might say, I'll stay at 147 if Haney, Ryan, and Teo are going to come into this division.
I think the Ryan Garcia fight makes a lot of sense.
Oh, man, that would be huge.
That'd be huge, and it's a big money fight. And I think size-wise, it makes sense. I'm having a hard time picturing Teofimo Lopez or Devin Haney in the ring with Boots. I've been around all these guys. Boots is a big welterweight, and Teofimo is a small 40-pounder. If we're being completely honest.
I'm out on that.
He's a small 40 pounder. I don't really see him, you know, fighting the biggest and the best at 147. Devin, who's bigger than Teo, he's not a true 47 pounder either. And fighting a guy like Boots, who's definitely on his way out of the division, even if he stays here for another year or two, he's huge at 47. So I Brian is the only ones that physically, size wise, makes sense to me seeing them in the ring together. And it's a big money fight, but, you know, I think Boots is kind of a guy, and I feel like he said this, he's not really into the whole YouTuber thing. Not that Ryan's a YouTuber, but you start dabbling with that once you get into a Ryan Garcia fight, because the guy doesn't have a title either. He's never had a title.
I don't know, man. I think Boots Ryan is the, out of those three names, is the most appetizing to me.
Yeah,
stylistically, absolutely. And just name-wise. Like, these guys want to get in the ring with Ryan Garcia. He is slowly, I don't know, hate him, love him. You can be down with what he did with the Haney fight. I'm excited that he's coming back. He's needed in boxing. He is one of the biggest names in boxing. I think he's top five.
He moves the needle like crazy.
So Boots should be welcoming a fight with Ryan Garcia down the line, because that's a bona fide pay-per-view. That's a huge fight. That's an event. You know, Haney's too small too. Like, he's big. Like, we look at him being too small for 140. Obviously way too small for 135, but he's not much taller than Teofimo. I've been around him as well. Like, Ryan's tall. Mm-hmm. Like, Boots Haney, I think, just thinking about that on paper, you kind of have that same logic with the Teofimo being a smaller 140 pounder. What do you think there?
Yeah, I mean I've been around all four of these guys. Mm-hmm. Ryan and I are eye to eye in terms of height. I think I'm
in terms of beliefs taller. Too in life.
Boots is eye to eye with me as well. So those are that's tall. That's tall for welterweight. And both Devin and Teo are considerably shorter than me. So, and just physically, I've been really close to these guys. I've given these guys pounds. I've hugged them. Like, they're not the same size humans. Put it that way. I know, and size isn't everything, but it does matter.
Hey, put that on t-shirt. Haney. Here's another thought. Did Haney watch that fight? Did Teofimo watch that fight? Or even Ryan Garcia watch that fight and be like, shit, this guy's a freaking problem. This might be the ruler. This is the ruler for years to come.
But also, I mean, Eddie has worked. So it seems like, because we have that card coming up, right? You got Tio, you got Haney, and you got Ryan, and they're all fighting on a Riyadh Saudi card.
Mm-hmm. You
know, what is the relationship now with Eddie and the Riyadh season? Probably fine, right? They probably still can work together.
For the time being, I'd say it's still strong.
So the Ryan Ennis fight's not crazy to think about.
No, that's I hope it's not a Saudi fight, because that is an American USA.
That's Barclays. Put that in Brooklyn.
I'll take it anywhere. I'll put it in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Just have it in freaking US, man. Don't put that inside of it.
How big was Ryan when Ryan Haney was in Barclays?
Huge.
It was huge.
That was awesome. That was a great week. Great night.
And I really,
a year ago.
I'm pushing it back. I'm saying it again. I want Boots in Brooklyn. Put Boots in Brooklyn. That fight makes way too much sense.
I got to hear from our friends out there. I want to hear from Grisham. I want to hear from Shackle. I want to hear from our matchroom friends. What it was like? What was it like in AC? Was it the crowd looked pretty decent? Is that something they do again?
It's hard to tell.
Hard to tell. I'll text Shackle. Was it hard to tell? Was it good enough to do again there? Will they go to Wells Fargo? That's something that's the arena that the 76ers play in Philly and the Flyers. Eddie Hearn mentioned it. He said Brian Norman versus Boots Summer, Wells Fargo will sell out. That's a bold statement by Eddie, and I believe him. But Brooklyn is also in the mix. There is a blueprint there. Like you brought up Danny Garcia. He made his bones. Like, you look at Danny Garcia on his Instagram right now. Guy's living. Like, I made a lot of money fighting 6-7 times at Barclays Center, and Boots can do that, and he can move up to different divisions. Another what next for Boots is 154. It's always been the question for Boots because he's so damn big, and he actually mentioned it himself. He said it in the ring after the Cameron fight, and that's the reason why this has become a narrative around Boots. I understand he wants to unify 147. I get that. Politics, really hard. Growing 27-year-old, very hard. So 154 could happen next for those reasons that I just named. And Boots Virgil Ortiz was the fight that we all wanted to see at 147. That was like the heir apparent to Spence Crawford. These are the two best welterweights to emerge from your generation, your era of 140, 147 guys. That's still there. Virgil's with Riyadh and Golden Boy. If Boots stays with Matchroom, Virgil versus Boots at 154. Good God, that's just violence.
Well, Virgil is turning out to be the guy at 54. And then if Boots is performing the way he's performing, and then he steps up, maybe he's even better at 54, if that's possible. That's a hell of a fight. And you got two young guys who are at the top of the sport, top of the division, and a very, very deep division fighting. Yeah, a lot of really cool options for Boots moving forward, and good and the options are good for us as fans, because you know obviously the guy is that damn good, and all the matchups seem fun. Like I'm salivating thinking about what's next for Boots.
I know that was the whole point of this, of him looking so great and not having to talk about like him languishing through 12 rounds, you know, getting a questionable decision or just going the distance, or it was demonstrative that now we can think about these big fights. We can think about 154 in a Virgil fight, which is clearly the fight, and they came close to making that fight. I mentioned it just before, like at the last second, Boots' side had in the contract, they had agreed to everything, and then last second added into the contract, oh, this fight's going to happen at 147. And Virgil had already fought at 154. It was well documented that he cannot make 147. The guy almost died trying to make 147. So obviously that fight has to happen at 154, but what I want to see is let 154 play out, which it will, I think, with Fundora, with Zhu, with Thurman, with Xander Zayas, Bakram, poor guy is never going to get this fight. Like Boots, Bakram, I mean, it would be fun, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. Charles Conwell, Jesus Ramos, there's a lot of names at 154. Let that all figure out. There's enough to happen at 147. There's enough options for Ennis, and the fact that his weight, you know, I didn't see anything where it's like, oh shit, like at least
he's got to move
afterwards.
Now. Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I think, I know. I don't, you're asking if I think that how he looks weight wise, like he has to move up soon.
Yeah. I'm saying, like, do you think he can stick around 147?
I do. I think that this fight showed that. I think that this fight showed a lot of things. And there's a lot we can take from this performance. And the reason we could take so much from him is because Stanionis is very good. I know the people who are going to revisionist history be like, ah, he was never that good. You know, he didn't really do anything. That's wrong. I think Stanionis is actually really good. And it's just Jaron is that much better. And he showed that. So, I think he's ultimately going to stay at 47. I think the plan always was for him to actually stay here and unify. But that's why I think he was kind of forced out of the Virgil fight. I think he wanted to go up. I'm sure he was willing to fight him. But I think that his team around him was like, nah, dude, let's get these 47-pound belts.
That could have been an out, yeah.
Yeah.
Putting that in there. I'll end the show with asking you this question about Boots Ennis, and the dreams are big. I feel like Eddie Hearn right now, and I'm asking you this question. At age 27, can Jaron Boots Ennis become undisputed at 147, 154, and 160? Because that would be nuts.
It's possible, but I can't unsee him getting hit so cleanly. At 47, what's going to happen at 54 with these guys could really punch? What's going to happen at 60 when these guys could really punch? Also, you know, the different size gloves at those weight classes. You know, he's fighting at 47 now with 8-ounce gloves. When he goes to 54, they're going to be 10s. You know, is his power going to be the same as he moves up with these guys, with these bigger bodied guys and these guys who can really punch? Because even if I'm the great Terrence Crawford, he got hit more when he was smaller, if you remember. Gamboa hurt him. You know, he got
lifted him off his feet.
Yes. So
no, that was Mean Machine.
And then he got better as he moved up. He got smarter in terms of his boxing skills. I do believe Terrence Crawford is a smarter boxer in terms of what they would have seen from Jaron. Definitely doesn't get hit as much as Jaron ever did, but he did get better as he got older and went up in weight. So maybe Jaron, as he goes up in weight at 54 and 60, he realizes, listen, I cannot just walk through these shots, because he does now. I got to be smarter. I got to use these sublime skills that I have. And but that's yet to be seen. It's hard to change your style when you've been doing it for so long. But it's not impossible. So no, to your answer, I could see it. But there are things that Jaron's going to have to improve upon if that's the case.
These are this is the goals. Like, these are the dreams for this guy. He's got that much ability. It's just about how he can navigate through. But, you know, Eddie brought it up after the fight and it got me thinking. It's like, wow, like, that's a pretty cool goal to set for yourself. You can do that at age 27. You can do that when it looks like you're going to grow into 160. It's worth thinking about. It's really hard to do, but it's going to be fun to watch. I got to say that about Boots Ennis for the next couple of years. He's that damn good. And he's got a lot of dance partners waiting for him. I'm excited. I'm excited for what's next for Boots. I'm excited for the end of this episode. I'm sorry, everybody. It's now over. We're going to go on with our day. I'm going to go work out. I'm going to try to get a lift in, make some food, get my life in order. How about you, Chris?
I'm going to go clean up my backyard a little bit. I'm going to get a little workout out there. I got the brand new turf, which is basically a giant adult playground now. So I do my workouts out
how's
there.
A,
I got
how's
my
a med- cleaning turf? I got my
blower and rinse it with
it gets wet. Does it get a little like?
No, goes okay, good. It seeps right through. It's literally made. I have dogs, so I got, you know, pet turf. So pet turf. It goes.
Does it have
right
the beads?
No. So underneath, it's got something called pea stone or pea gravel, which doesn't retain any of the odor. So you don't want, because sometimes if you just use sand, that'll the dog piss will clump up in the sand, and then when it rains, it'll smell like piss.
That's what I was thinking. I don't want that.
Yeah. No. No,
so peeing outside is fun though. I'll say that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can still do it on my turf. It's not going
to
smell.
But, when I come to your house, I'm going to pee on your turf.
It is super fun because I can work out there. I can do the ladder drills. We throw med balls. Got my guys out there. We're doing mitts. It's fun. It's cool.
Team Algeria, the Algeria backyard, Algeria Republic, Encore Algeria Club. I heard Wet Republic is no more.
Oh, really?
Or they changed the name. Wet Republic, the pool party at the MGM Grand. Is now they changed the name. I think they like reimagined it or
we're aged now. We remember Wet Republic, even though it's not
a giant ass pool, and yeah, it was just like a free for all there.
I've had a few days over there, boy. Woo! Had a day. Well,
it's like Encore Beach Club, whoever's been there is like fancy. It's a little more intimate.
Yeah,
Wet Republic was fantastic. Here's a massive pool. And a lot of bars around it. Come as you go.
And if you're going in the pool, you should probably be wearing a condom because there's some gross stuff swimming around in there.
Talk about peeing in pools. Oof. Talk about peeing in outside.
Yeah.
That's Vegas pool parties for you. We're in there, everybody. Don't pee in pools unless you're in Vegas and you don't feel like waiting online at the bathroom. Can't say I've never done that. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We'll see you next time.